Okay. Did that eliminate our echo? It did. How did you figure that out, Cheryl? Or Glenn? That's another secret thing.
Yes.
Okay. Well, anyway, let's spend a minute on the agenda, and then as the rest of the folks have joined the call, we'll call the roll and get started. Really, today's call is about the drafting efforts that have been going on for the last 3 days. And so what I've done is just divided the agenda into really three major parts. My attempt at DAG 4 drafting sort of exploded, so I just want to figure out what to do with that. And then the last item is sort of to take an assessment of where we're at and the way forward, because we are starting to run pretty close to the end of the time in our work plan. Any thoughts about the agenda before we call the roll and get going? I don't see any hands up, so Glenn, why don't you go ahead and call the roll, and we'll get started.
I'll do that with pleasure. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the Vertical Integration Call, 8th of July. On the call, we have Badwan Shombi, Cheryl Langdonor, Mikey O'Connor, Keith Drazek, Volker Greiman, Sebastian Bachelot, Roberto Gaetano, Jeffrey Eckhouse, Ron Andrews, Eric Brunner-Williams, Amadeo Abril-Abril, Avery Doria, Alan Greenberg, Anthony Van Couvering, Barry Cobb, Tony Harris, Staten Hammock, Tim Ruiz, Scott Austin, Ken Stubbs, Christina Rosette, and John Nevitt. And for staff, we have David Geiser, Marika Koenig, Margie Milam, and Glenda Sanjuri, myself. Have I left off anyone? Thank you, Mikey. Over to you.
Thanks, Glenn. Okay, so we've got sort of three big pieces of business to get through. I didn't have any particularly complicated ideas in terms of order, so I sort of at random put Tim and the exception process first. Tim, do you have a different draft that you want to share with the group? And if so, if you email it to me, I'll put it up in that notes section.
No, I have my draft is out there. Anthony created one, so those are the two drafts you've got.
Okay. How do you want to proceed? Do you want to try and sort of summarize the two, summarize the major differences?
Me? No. Actually, I prefer not.
Okay. Anthony, do you want me to put Tim's up and then you insert differences?
Well, I did that in a redlined version, Mikey. I'm happy to quickly summarize if it's helpful for people who didn't read it. And Tim can correct me if I've mischaracterized what he... in broad strokes, Tim's draft looks for narrow exceptions that are based on effectively a narrow definition of community, which I might also call disadvantaged registries. And my draft essentially doesn't try to define the character of the registry, but has exceptions for those registries which are not adopted by registrars in a meaningful way, meaning that either they don't adopt them at all, or they don't adopt them in a way that can communicate to their identified user base. In other words, for instance, something's not in their own language or script. So those are the essential differences.
Okay, I've got your red line in front of me, and I'm sort of quickly transforming it into something that I can put up on the page. But I'll go ahead and run a queue on a conversation about those while I'm doing that. Anybody have thoughts either way on how that should proceed? Amadeo, go ahead.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, fighting with the mute button. I have a procedural question for you, Mikey. What are we supposed to do with these three proposals? My question is the following. I have nothing against a lot of things in favor of what Tim has sent. I have also a lot of things in favor of some of the things that Anthony has proposed. The problem is that both things are just one view of the cathedral. They're just one face, one side. We are talking about one concrete type of exception. Then we have SRSU as another type of exception. But I was really, you know, hoping that this exception exercise was about having possible types of exception and then deciding which one were worth considering or not. Because I think there should be other exceptions to the registrar should even look at their eyes. Even if I accept the principle, I think that there are other exceptions possible.
And so the question to me is what, Amadeo?
The question is, we are discussing this, but the question is, let's imagine that I say that I think that this proposal is okay. Does it mean that this is all for exceptions? That's the sense of my question. Because if that's the sense, I should say no. Even if I like what I'm seeing, with probably some changes. You understand what I mean? It is this exception, yes, I think it makes sense, but I don't think this is exceptions in general.
Tim or Anthony, either of you want to respond? I'm not.
Sure. I'll be happy to respond. I think that the format that Tim laid out is good, in that it sets out the issue. It frames that there's some kind of base agreement, which I struck out RAC 2 and put to be determined, and then there are a number of enumerated exceptions. So you could add to that list without a problem. The reason I put in the ones that I did was that I think they need very little compliance, and so it's simpler, whereas the other ones would actually need to be watched or at least some determinations made by panels and so on. So my object was to come up with a simple thing, but there is nothing in the structure of the document that would prevent people from enumerating other exceptions that they thought were worthy and possibly ones that neither I nor Tim thought of.
Okay, then the only thing I'm saying is that after the call I will send a proposal that, Mikey, you do whatever you want with this. You don't take that as a formal proposal if you don't want to. That's a proposal for a sort of, let's say, automatic exception, market-based one. That is, that doesn't need the sort of evaluation that Anthony was describing. That could be added. It's not, I repeat, nothing against the proposal on the table.
Yeah, Anthony, that's what I heard you saying. Tim, your hand came up during that. Do you want to respond as well?
Yeah, you know, my original purpose was suggesting this, or goal, was to provide the possibility of some exceptions for, I think, as Anthony put it, those that may be possibly disadvantaged economically, perhaps, or in other ways. I think one example I did see in Anthony's, although I don't support his changes overall, one example I saw in there was, a language community that had limited support from registrar, something of that nature, and I think perhaps something like that could make sense. So I don't disagree that there might be other cases, but my goal wasn't to figure out how to do something different to solve the vertical integration issue. It was the fact that we can't find consensus on it. So how can we, since that's true, how can we provide some exceptions for those that truly can demonstrate a need? So that's what I'd want to be careful about. And I think trying to presuppose or precondition somehow registry failures and what we'll do with that, I think is a dangerous track to go down. We have not had one. In fact, we haven't had a registry that hasn't had registrar support, and I would propose meaningful registrar support. And I see nothing that indicates that any of the existing registries who have problems, including Museum, Arrow, any of the sponsored TLDs, it has nothing to do with registrar support. It has other issues involved. So I think, trying to presuppose what the conditions might be in which a registry could falter or fail is dangerous, and we should deal with that when it happens. Certainly recognize that ICANN may propose some sort of exceptions that put it up for public comment, allow the community to respond, and then for that to be dealt with. So that's not the purpose of what I was creating. That's probably the biggest area where it differs between what I did and what Anthony did. But could there be possibility of other exceptions? Yeah, I think so. But I'd still, my goal would be to keep it very narrow.
Thanks, Tim. Margie, I am having a hell of a time getting that document transmogrified into something that can be shared with the group. So I'm going to throw the ball to you and see if you can get it up in that hole that I've created on our screen. Sorry about that. Anthony, is your hand up left up from before, or is this a new thought that you
got? No, that's me new.
Okay, go ahead.
And I think one way, in the spirit of getting stuff done, that we might proceed is to come up with a framework that we can agree on and enumerate some exceptions and perhaps take a sense of the group of which exceptions have more support, and obviously those could be added, and then, throw that over the transom to ICANN and let them, with a full sense of what the sense of the group is, even though it's fractured, come up with something that they then put out for comment. In other words, we may not have to do more than simply say that we would, assuming that we end up with something that needs exceptions, we may not need to do more than say that we recognize that there are exceptions that could be made, and here are some of the exceptions that members of the group have identified, and here's some sense of the support that these exceptions have.
Now, what we could do, Anthony and Tim, is we could use this part of the document to simply describe the process and then the exception part could be either examples or to be determined, but simply acknowledge that right now there is the need for an exception process of some sort without specifying which ones. Does that carry it further in the direction that you were thinking, Anthony, or does that go too far?
I think it would be useful for whoever is drafting something for comment to have some idea of what kind of exceptions this group was thinking of rather than just leave it completely open. But otherwise, I agree with you.
So what if we called them examples and then acknowledged that the group is quite divided on these, we could go ahead and poll on those and give people a sense of where the group stands on them.
Especially if the advocates care to, write, a small amount of text describing why they think it's useful or not, so that when there's someone who's trying to put this together, they have a sense of of the thinking behind it rather than just the bare examples. I think that would be useful.
Yeah,
I don't disagree, Mikey, as long as this doesn't become a tool for everyone to try to circumvent the fact that we don't have consensus on many of these issues. So we're going to try to throw the kitchen sink in for exceptions. I think that's the danger we run into here.
Yeah, well, that's actually part of the appeal of the notion of just describing an exception process without trying to include exceptions in that process.
Right, but I mean, we could get to where, okay, well, we have one person in support of this exception, we have two people in support of this exception, we've got a list of 33 exceptions that all have a few people in support. I'm not sure that that serves a purpose.
I agree with you, Tim. I don't have any problem with that. I think that if you want to just say there should be exceptions, and then people can put what they think should be an exception in their comments and let the staff read that. Well, that's fine with me, too. I just think that if we go with something that has limitations, there obviously we've heard a number of different exceptions that people want to put forward. I put some, Kim has put some, Christina has put some. Then if we just say there should be exceptions and let people identify those themselves in their comments, that's another way of bringing those to the attention of ICANN without trying to, pretend that there's consensus within this group. And I agree with you, Tim, that would be incorrect to do.
Margie's got her hand up, and then I'll go to Amadeo and Christina. But Margie, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, Mikey, I just wanted to clarify. What document did you want me to try to put up?
This is, I guess the one that I was trying to get was the one that Anthony sent earlier today called BI Exceptions Redline.x.
Yeah, I have that. I should be able to post it. Give me a minute.
Okay, thanks. Amadeo? You may be on mute, Amadeo.
Yes, I think I was on mute.
I
will say very interesting things, by the way, to myself. In any case, very short, regardless of the number of exceptions we may have, that probably the important thing is that some exceptions will have reasons behind and will also have metrics and guidelines to appreciate when they can be allowed, like the exercise the team has gone through. These exceptions will be mature enough for the board probably to take. If other exceptions deserve consideration, but we are unable to agree on metrics or guidelines or testing beds on which to, contrast whether they meet the criteria or not, well, they will be left for future evaluation. So the exercise isn't just listing the exemptions, but also providing the metrics or the guidelines just in individual cases.
Tim, Anthony, does that fit into the sense that you're seeing this go?
It's fine with me. I like it. I mean, I think we have to punt to a certain extent, and we should just sort of define the limits of our punting, and I like Amadeo's suggestion.
Tim, are you okay with that?
Well, I don't know. I guess I have to see it. I'm not quite sure I completely understand where we're going.
The sense that I've got is that the sort of payday part of the write-up is the notion that there needs to be an exception process, and de-emphasizing the specifics of the exceptions in this, but rather setting the framework by which exceptions would be evaluated, if I were to recharacterize Amadeo's point.
I mean, as long as it explains why we went down this road. I mean, if there's agreement that we want to, but I mean, it wasn't again to open a door for everybody to jump in with their particular exception because they feel they need it. but it was to be sure that we leave an opportunity to address exceptions for disadvantaged, potentially disadvantaged applicants from whether it's developing countries or they're trying to address a language-based TLD for a very specific community that isn't otherwise going to be addressed. You know, somehow, I mean, that concept's got to get across. Or maybe it's that some felt that, you know, something needed to be in place up front to account for, registries that are failing. Although I don't agree with that, I don't have any problem with that. That doesn't really get into the vertical integration issue, per se. But to just say, well, that we all agree that there needs to be exceptions, well, of course everybody agrees. That's what we've been arguing about for the last 6 months. So I just didn't need to be specific and clear about what this is about, or that it's just going to be confusing to whoever's looking at it in the end.
One approach to this would be to let the two of you take another try at a draft, either during this call or quickly thereafter. I'm not sure where to take it from here if we don't. I'm sorry, wait a minute. Before I say all that, I should let Christina speak. Sorry. Christina, you're next. And others of you, could you mute? We're starting to get a fair amount of background noise on the line here.
Thanks, Mikey. I don't have a problem with our developing a process by which exceptions would be applied for, or even going further and identifying the criteria that need to be considered generally in granting them. And, in fact, I think that would be helpful to do. What I do have an issue with is the idea that we would put forward only some of the exceptions but not all of them, and that we would rely on public comments. I think I have problems with that for two reasons. First, I think it really, just as a matter of fairness, if any of the exceptions are going to be identified in this document, then all of the ones that have been put forward should be, along with what level of support they have, in large part because if I was understanding Anthony correctly about relying on public comment, and maybe it wasn't just public comment, but comment, you know, the fact of the matter is the board told a number of us in Brussels that they don't read it. I know that the GNSO council's got no mechanism to actually read it. It's really up to what the individual counselors do. I don't even know that there's a process for the staff to provide counsel with a summary in a timely fashion of the public comment. And that's independent of the fact that you've got a lot of people out there who think that staff don't adequately summarize their public comment. So, you know, those are all bigger issues, but to the extent that we're at the point where we're identifying what's going in our report, I really do believe that if we are going to be identifying any exceptions, we need to identify all of them and the level of support for each.
How about that for an addition to the process, Tim and Anthony especially?
No, it makes no sense, because then we're just back to where we were before. I don't see the point. If you want to go down that road, that's fine. We're just going to end up with a duplication of the mess we've already got. But, you know, if that's where everybody wants to go, I guess it's not going to change anything, you know.
Sorry. I think we'll end up with a laundry list. Whether that comes in the report or via the comments, I don't really mind either way. I think, as I said before, that, given the time constraints and the hardness of the positions, we're not going to come to a full consensus, and we have to punt to some extent, and the form of that does not really concern me that much. I understand what Christina says. I certainly share the frustration at the apparent lack of, what the board takes into account from public comments. I don't know that that's any different from what they'll take into account from what we send them, but it's no mind to me either way.
So whoever just cleared their throat, could you mute? Okay. So, let's see. Ron, I guess you're next.
Thank you, Mikey. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Very good. I just want to come back to something that was said earlier in, I think, Tim's comments, and he was talking about just being cautious. As you've seen me on this list for months on end, I just want to appear on the side of caution at all times because it's important that we do. So I just want to bring it forward that before we hand anything off, we as this work group need to do the work first. And clearly consideration needs to be given to this task that we're undertaking as much as any other element that we've been working on in this working group. So I think we need to consider that if there are possibilities right now within existing policy that we have whereby we could utilize that policy and make amendments to provide for exceptions, it's probably a safer way than opening up something for anyone just to declare themselves they are that. So if we need to give more study to it, then need to take the time, then why don't we consider allowing these ones who feel they meet the SRSU requirements as we might define in some simple terms as we understand them today. They want to queue up as in the first round, so they actually get a place in a queue for their space. Nothing can happen to that space. It's parked until everything is resolved from our side, from the working group's side. I think that would be a better and more fair way forward. Opening the door right now and just saying, okay, we didn't get the other stuff done and we're all frustrated, so let's just push this SRSU thing out right now and get it in the books, we get started. That's not serving anyone. So I just want to provide another word of caution. Thank you.
Thanks, Ron. Tim?
I guess picking up on something Ron said about, I guess my idea wasn't that we end up with something else that we have to now include in our report that we don't have consensus on. I don't see where that gets us. If we're going to approach it as Christina suggests, and I can understand why she wants to do it that way or why others do. Really that's all we're going to end up with is just here's another process with all these same ideas that we discussed in the other part of our working group sessions that we didn't find consensus on. Now here's another thing where everybody's trying to get them in and we don't have consensus on those either. I don't see where that gets anywhere. And the only other thing I want to say, I think it's just too bad that as a result of all of our individual desires to get what we want out of this, we're going to end up just letting this be what it is, and it'll end up potentially blocking some very valid applicants from doing things that we shouldn't have any issue with, that don't involve, just somebody trying to figure out another way to make a lot of money or, multi-million, $100 million, billion-dollar companies trying to figure out how to do things. But just applicants trying to address a public interest need in a developing area, that's kind of sad, but it looks like that's likely where we're headed, I guess.
I'm not sure how to proceed on this one. Jeff Eckhaus, go ahead.
Thanks. I just wanted to bring something up that I guess Tim just made me think about this, and I guess it's along these lines, is that, many people we've seen on some of the emails and some of the calls, they say, we should let some of the exceptions that are in, I'm putting this in quotes, in the public interest, have the exceptions, have these pieces, but I'm not sure that we can ever that this hot potato word or whatever, in the public interest, just because somebody is small and, works and is in a non-English language and in an impoverished country doesn't necessarily put it in the public interest. I believe that there's been a lot of work by larger corporations that might have been for-profit that have been in the public interest, and I think that to classify things as just because they're smaller or they're not for profit necessarily in the public interest, I think that's a mistake, and I think that's one of the details that we need to get past. But I just wanted to put that out because a lot of large companies and corporations have done things in the public interest that were for-profit companies and in English or in North America. So just wanted to put that point out there.
Thanks, Jeff. Anthony, I think you're next.
Yeah, I'd like talkingly to agree with both of the previous two speakers. Certainly, my interest in putting forward what I did was to, number one, get rid of the subjective determination of what's in the public interest or not, especially on a global basis. I think that's, you know, almost as impossible as anything you can think of. And secondly, to agree with Tim that, you know, my interest in this is to make sure that no one is with a good idea just gets excluded or is faced, which I think is the same thing, with a huge regulatory burden or actual cost, and I use the idea of separation as an enormous cost for a small registry, to be able to do what they need to do. So that's why my proposal simply says, if you can't get registrar support in a meaningful way, then you ought to be able to form a registrar yourself and distribute your own TLD so that you're not sort of sitting there with a registry and no distribution channel. So I really did try to take what I thought were the good parts of Tim's proposal and put them in a different way that would require very little compliance oversight, at least in this respect, and would simply remove what I consider to be real barriers to entry if we adopt, say, the RAC Plus proposal for the most part. So I just wanted to make that point. Thanks.
Thanks, Anthony. I think I'm going to park this topic for a bit and move on to the next one. I'm not sure. We're sort of getting between a rock and a hard place of time and in terms of the way to proceed. My hope was that we would have language that we were a little bit closer to consensus on than at least it seems like we are, that we could go out and do a poll on. And so I'm not hearing sort of a strong thread of consensus around this. So I think I want to put this one on hold, and we'll pick it up before the end of the call again and decide how to proceed. But I guess I'd like to hear from the other two groups and see if anything is going to emerge. I mean, essentially, we're down to the place where I hate to say it this way, but we're down to the place where we have to make the consensus call. And my hope coming out of Monday was that we might have three areas around which we could build a consensus, but I'm not sure that this one made it. So I think I'd like to hear from the other two groups and then spend the very end of the call sort of making the determination what to do next. Keith, go ahead.
Thanks, Mikey. I just wanted, actually, I think Anthony had his hand up before I did.
That's fine. Why don't you go ahead and finish
old.
Your thought?
That's old.
Okay. So, Keith, you're on.
Okay. There's just been some interesting chat in the chat feature here, and not specifically about all exceptions, but about the distinction of what an orphan TLD is. And I guess I'd like to pose this question for everybody on the call, and that is, there any opposition in the working group to the concept or the presumption that an orphan TLD, an orphaned registry that cannot get adequate registrar support, should be prohibited from taking their TLD to market? I guess I haven't heard a whole lot of opposition. And, yeah, I mean, I think there's still some questions about, the timing and the process for determining what an orphan is you know, and when that determination is made. But, you know, is there anybody in the working group that opposes allowing an orphan TLD to become its own registrar and self-distribute?
Avery, I think, raised her hand. And I guess, sorry, I'm not paying attention to the order. Tim, and then
Tim,
Avery.
There before me.
Yeah. Tim, go ahead.
You know, just a general blanket objection to that, Keith. I myself know. Could there be objection in certain cases? I think possibly. So it's difficult to say that. I mean, that's a problem with a lot of these things. To say that without knowing the situation and the TLD and who it's addressing, et cetera, to say that there's a blanket, that there can be a blanket rule either way, that's the problem. I think there certainly should be a consideration that if it does turn out that a TLD is orphaned, that there's some mechanism to which they can appeal to ICANN for some sort of relief or exception. But I think that should be reviewed by the community. I don't think it should be made, that decision should be made in a vacuum. And I think it's difficult for us to come up with a blanket set of rules that can be evenly and justifiably applied in every unknown case that could come up and occur. So I don't know if that's a really clear answer or not, but that's the way I feel about it.
Thanks, Tim. Avery?
Yeah, hi. On the topic, I haven't a problem with sort of making the objection. I think it's similar in this case. I'm almost agreeing with Tim that orphans are sort of very much after the fact. You can't know that something is an orphan before it actually happens. And I do believe that we need to have a solution in place before things are orphaned. Though, yes, I agree, once something is seen to be an orphan, something should be able to happen with it. I think we've gotten somewhere, if I understand, in that an exceptions list and the existence of an exceptions list seems to be accepted. That the existence of a review mechanism of some sort to act as a checkpoint on exception list exceptions seems to be accepted. Maybe I'm wrong, but just listening that far. And if we have anywhere close to agreement, even though we still need to argue a lot about what needs to be on the exceptions list, whether it's just needs-based or whether it's also things like, well, if you don't need a registrar services, why pay for them? Or some other notion, that doesn't really matter. We can have a longer discussion after having said, if there is indeed consensus, we have consensus on building a exceptions list. We have a consensus on, you know, having a review panel that reviews this exceptions list. And we will, over the next couple months, work to give details on what are exceptions and what it means to get an exception kind of thing. So, you know, getting halfway to the point of saying, we have something where we think we have an agreement, we just need more work to do details. And that's different than saying we need more time to come to any consensus. Thank you.
I'd like to capture that thought and sort of put that back to the group. The notion that we agree that there needs to be an exception process, that there needs to be an exception list, and that more time is required to refine those lists. I think what I'd like to do is go to Tim and Anthony first, but is that indeed the case, that we agree on that and that the difficulty is in the details of the exception list itself?
Go ahead, Tim. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, yeah, I think that pretty much captures it. I think the way Avery said it, if we can accept that there is an exception list, that exceptions are reviewed by an exception panel and not a set of guidelines. Oops, I just lost it. Anyway, the way she put it in the chat, I think that fairly represents how I would see it. As long as there's, you know, it's still a bottom-up consensus process that defines what those exceptions are.
How about if we gave that one back to the three of you to redraft, including Avery and the three of you this time, to capture that either for later in this call or very soon thereafter, so that we could go out and poll for consensus on that. Would that be an acceptable way forward? I'm not hearing anybody screaming in pain. Let me take Richard and Jeffrey, and then maybe that's the way we could proceed. Richard, go ahead. Richard, before you start, please, people, somebody who breathes very heavily is not muted, and it's getting hard to hear people over it. So if everybody could please mute, that would be great. Go ahead, Richard.
Yeah, I endorse the orphan approach, too, to answer Keith's question. And I agree with what Tim said about orphan. I agree with what Avery said as well. Perhaps with a small exception, Avery, I think you said that a concern would be that it would be hard to establish whether you're an orphan or not until sort of late into the launch cycle of the TLD. But I think typically you would know pretty early. You would, generally speaking, I think you would know before you actually did sort of general public availability launch if you weren't getting registrars offering your TLD. So I don't think we'd have a problem where someone was sort of unable to launch. I mean, potentially their launch might get delayed while they went through whatever process we set up to get approval for orphan, but I don't think we're talking about a significant period of time in which the TLD is just simply can't be sold while we're waiting for this. I think we're going to know pretty early for a TLD that's in that situation. So, and I think this is an area where maybe we are getting some consensus, this orphan notion.
Thanks, Richard. Jeffrey, go ahead.
Yeah, I believe it was Anthony that said it on the chat, and I'll sort of reiterate doing something about a registrar of last resort, and what I'd like to sort of flip that around is saying, what happens now when ICANN deaccredits a registrar? They put out sort of a modified or simplified RFP for registrars to see who would like to take over that registrar, and then, you know, they have to answer a set of questions, and then based upon, you know, there's a point system, and it has to do with geography and other, you know, a whole bunch of other factors. I think that if we use something like that, it would be a much simpler process. We wouldn't need exceptions to the rules, and I believe it would prevent, let's call it the green mail issue, because of the competitive marketplace. I think that there would be registrars lining up to do it and to say, if you said, here's what it is, I need to be the registrar, and you have a pool of people, and to be the registrar of last resort or to be one of a few, I think that that would be easy, and I really don't believe that the orphan one would be in there. And I think that maybe if we got past this point where if nobody took it, which I can't believe it, then we could deal with it. But I think there are so many options and so much availability and processes that seem to work on this, where registrars are fighting. I know that people have submitted applications for some of the registrars that lost their credentials that had like 100 names in it, and there were multiple applications. So I think that there is a process. I think it works. I don't think we need to work on exceptions for this, because there will be registrars that will do it, and we already have a process that works for it.
Mike,
thanks, Jeff. I just heard somebody call my name.
Yeah, Ken Stubbs. I have a point of order. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Mike, but we're 50 minutes into the call. And correct me if I'm wrong. You originally budgeted 20 minutes for this, and I agree that we're reaching in some sort of an agreement, but the agreement is on a very, very small part of some of the overall issues. And I'm afraid we're going to get done with this call with very little accomplished in terms of the total scope of the issues we had to deal with. I'm sorry. Thanks, Mike.
That's fine. Thanks, Ken. Tim, why don't we make you the last commenter on this one, and then we'll push along to the next.
Give them to an economist.
Yeah, I was just going to I was just trying to get some clarity on Jeff Eckes's comments, and just making sure we're not confusing orphaned with failed, because I think there is a difference. Orphaned is a situation where a registry can't really get a start because it doesn't have registrar support, and that's one issue. A registry may later fail just because nobody wants it, and that's a different issue. I don't think we've been talking about necessarily, but I wasn't sure if that's what Jeff was referring to.
No, can I respond quickly, Tim?
I'm gonna cut this off because I don't think it's really germane to the main thread of the conversation at this point. What I'd like to do is let Anthony, Tim, and Aubrey go off and draft essentially a slightly more formal version of what Aubrey proposed, since it seems as though that was the point around there was a fair amount of agreement, and get that out to the list pretty quickly so that we can take a look at it over the next few days and try and drive it to ground on Monday's call, if that's okay. And I'd like to push along to the compliance and enforcement piece. I don't know who's got the latest draft of that, but whoever does, if you could push it along to Margie, then she can share it for the rest of us. But is there somebody who wants to sort of describe where that conversation is at? I'm sort of thinking Brian, but I don't want to put you on the spot if there's somebody else who's sort of the lead drafter right now. Brian, are you on the call? Or are you muted? Maybe you're muted. Anybody else from the group that worked on that wants to step into the spotlight? And
which group is this, Mikey?
This is the compliance one.
Mikey, can you hear?
Yes, I can.
Hey, Mikey, it's Brian. Sorry about that.
Oh, there we go. Now I can hear you.
Okay. I'll, as you asked, just send it to Margie. I did send it to the list. I'm hoping that people on the call at least have access to it.
Yeah, and if it's the same one that's on the list, then that's fine. I wasn't sure if there was any subsequent conversation that changed it at all, so I just wanted to give you a chance to do the...
No, thanks. There was some subsequent conversation, but no, what I sent to the list yesterday is what's on the table for discussion as a draft.
Okay.
So if Margie wants to just post that, I'll send it to her right now anyway, and then walk through it. All right, that's off to Margie. And I'll just start.
Can I ask a question? It's Margie. Is this a thing that Ken Stubbs circulated, or is it?
Yeah.
Okay, I get that. Okay.
Got it? All right, you want to throw it up there?
Yeah, to be able to get it.
Okay. And let me, while you're doing that, let me just preface by saying, with regard to the comments from the sub-working team on the list, this thing was put forward as a draft. The sub-working team, it was sent to the sub-working team, and I had gotten comments from everybody except Volker later in the day yesterday, and apologies, Volker, but somebody on the call last time had asked that the sub-working teams post these drafts to the list so that everybody in the working group could have visibility into what we were doing. So under those circumstances, late yesterday with the call today, I know I hadn't heard from you, but I had heard from others, and I pulled the trigger. I don't view this as anything but a draft and a discussion document, just to clear the air here, and looking forward to people's comments today. So if you've had a chance to read it, it's what I would characterize as an outline of elements of a compliance and enforcement program if one was to be designed, built, and operated for the new TLD vertical integration proposal that's adopted. And as I noted at the outset, since we don't have a specific proposal that has consensus, we can't at this very moment draft and tailor a compliance and enforcement program to a particular set of market conditions. But that being said, I won't spend a lot of time because most of these are under both the heading of compliance, which is its own creature here, and under the heading enforcement, I've put what are effectively bullet points of elements of each of those aspects of an overall compliance and enforcement program. And in the compliance bucket, I think see that some of these elements, like a formal compliance plan, for example, program, are things that a company that would be subject to these rules would draft and circulate to its employees and provide training on. But a formal written compliance program is also something that ICANN's enforcement team could develop and draft and circulate as almost a service to the companies that are subject to the rules. And the example I use there is when I was at the Department of Commerce in the Export Administration office, we had a handbook that was available to the public, to exporters who were subject to the rules, that identified the rules of the program, that also had explanations of how the rules applied, even had, for example, scenarios, like a given fact pattern, and how would the rules apply to this particular fact pattern. So just to say that compliance, that formal written compliance program, is both something that a company that's subject to the rules, that's trying hard to comply with them, something they would be expected to develop and socialize and train on internally, but also something that ICANN's enforcement staff could develop as guidance as well. The enforcement bucket, if you will, is obviously something that would be uniquely on ICANN's. It's their responsibility, effectively. And again, I've hit basic high-level points. You need to have monitoring and inspection. There are a couple of sub-bullets there, use of data and information system to identify trends, prioritization of investigations, and promoting efficient use of enforcement resources, systems for public assistance in monitoring and detection, voluntary disclosures. This is an interesting element of a program that I used to work in where if a company detected that there was a violation of the rules and was a company that wasn't intentionally doing so, you can provide a mechanism whereby they effectively self-report, drop a dime on themselves, and then they go through a formal process of doing a summary, an investigation, working with ICANN or the Enforcement Bureau in this sense, and finding their way toward a more minimal penalty, if you will, because what happened was not with intent. It was discovered, it was disclosed, and they did all the right things once they found out. So there's a number of different elements here that can be put into place that, in this instance, would avoid the worst possible sanction being brought against a company. And, of course, that would also depend on the company's willingness to come in and disclose. So I'm not going to spend much more time walking through there. I'm more interested in the discussion points that people have around this because I think everything is hopefully clear enough on its face.
Thanks, Brian. Before I start into the queue, just one question for you. Do you think that it would that this draft might respond well to the same sort of approach that we just started taking with previous one where we sort of sketch out the points around which we agree and then later in the document sort of specify the things that remain to be worked out so that we could get a stake in the ground around which we've hopefully got consensus and then clearly describe the parts that we still need to finish?
Yeah, I'm really open to how what people's reactions are to this and if, trying to find where there's consensus and not as part of that process.
Okay.
I don't want to do that.
Thanks, Brian. Anthony, go ahead.
Thanks, Mikey. I just wanted to bring up a couple of the conversations that we've had in the subgroup, the comments that were made.
which were, you know, a couple. First, you know, I think that Brian's draft is an excellent sort of a compliance program, but there are two things that I have issues with. The first is that it doesn't really talk about what the harms are that we're looking to address. And the second is that it is very much a big company sort of program. I mean, if you took a 10-person registry and asked them to do all of this, that would quickly become a 15-person registry and, you know, with approximately a doubling of costs. So I would certainly like to see this, you know, go forward in the context of actual harms that we're looking at and try to keep it as simple as possible so that we reduce the burden on the people who are monitoring the compliance and enforcing it, first of all, and secondly, on the registries themselves, so that we have a simple program as possible that people can comply with and there are not a lot of ambiguities so that people end up not complying even though they thought they were. Thank you.
Thanks, Anthony. Ron, go ahead.
Thank you. I'll just pick up on what Anthony just brought up. And while it seems a very daunting task, right now the International Olympic Committee working through WADA, which is the anti-doping commission to make sure that all athletes that participate at the Games are drug-free, have instituted a policy that the athletes have to be available within 24 hours or 12 hours of these people walking, showing up. So if they came knocking at the door and the athlete wasn't there, within 12 hours that athlete has to show up. And that's a very interesting program because you can imagine the enormity of it. So in this case, what is quite possible is from the Federation's point of view, it becomes very difficult for them to meet this requirement because in many cases, some of the smaller federations are a half man and a dog that manage the secretariat. So in order to accomplish that, they work through a combined effort where everyone contributes to a pool, and that pool more or less pays for all of the anti-doping requirements. So this can be done in the same way, that there's a small fee that's put forth if necessary. Thank you.
Thanks, Ron. Jeffrey, go ahead.
Thanks. And Ron, that was exactly my my philosophy when I sent, I mean, you know, with the blizzard of emails everyone has, but I had actually sent that proposal to this list maybe a month ago saying that groups who wanted co-ownership or other compliance would put into a pool, and then that pool would fund the compliance and audit issues, specifically the audit issues, so that there wouldn't be one specific registry that would be targeted, and also saying, you know, the issue sort of with what happened with the ratings agencies where it was saying, hey, one person was paying for their rating, so the judgment was somewhat biased. If everyone put into a pool, you didn't know who it was, and it was paid through by an independent party, and that was my piece through for my suggestion on this. And I guess the overall question then is for the people, you know, I guess Ron and Brian were both supporters of the RAC proposal, was that with these, you know, these issues, with these compliance pieces in place, would that group sort of compromise on there? Or if not, then what is the purpose of some of these compliance issues? I guess that's I'll leave with that question.
Thanks, Jeff. Tim, go ahead.
I think that's an interesting approach to funding. What I guess I'm still not clear about is who's going to do it. Again, in Brussels, we got mixed messages from board members. On one hand, you know, we'll do whatever is required. On the other hand, we had others saying, we want it as simple as possible, we don't intend to do audits, blah, blah, blah. So funding is one thing, figuring out, you know, who's going to be responsible is another, and that's where I'm not clear.
Ron, before I turn the floor over to you, I sort of want to focus us back on the parts of this that perhaps we agree on. some of this conversation is clearly going to have to go into the figure out later pile. But if people could amplify the points of agreement right now, that would be helpful, because really our goal at this stage is to find those and bring them to the fore and make it clear in the interim report that these are the things we agree on and these other things are things that we're going to continue to work on, both during the public comment period and perhaps even beyond the final report. So with that, go ahead, Ron.
Thank you, Mikey. No, the question was asked by Jeff Eckhouse. I just wanted to respond from my perspective. You know, where do I stand in terms of the RAC support? I've always stood in the position of we have to move forward cautiously because we're about to embark on an expedition that we've never done before. And we're going to ring a bell to tell the whole world for 4 or 5 months in advance that we're about to go and embark on this exercise. And if the whole thing goes kaflooey because we just tried to do too much stuff, then it's nuts. I mean, it's all on us. We are the ones building this. So let's be very clear that my support, you know, whether it's the 15% or whether it's across the board or anti-gaming, all of these things come back to the same thing. It's about all of the elements of this thing. It's not just what is gaming or what is this or what is that. It's the whole package and how it fits into an internet that's going to now stand up for the next 100 years based on a lot of the principles we're putting in place. So when somebody says, well, we can do things right away, I say, okay, well and good, but what if we don't? And then we get there and we still have to paint a whole room. We got a gallon of paint. We're not going to make it. And we're going to look like fools. And I'm not caring about my reputation. I'm caring about the work that we've undertaken here to do what's right here. So the point is, as much as we all are anxious to do things, and I agree we should, let's make sure we just plan the time necessary. I don't think we need to extend the whole thing on VI. I think we're pretty well there. We're going to have, in the next couple of days, we'll sort it out. But in terms of working on these other elements, let's just give ourselves the time to do it. Thank you.
Thanks, Ron. Ken, go ahead. You may be on mute, Ken. We're not hearing you yet. Still not hearing you.
Hello, Mike.
There we go. Now we hear you.
I'm sorry. I'm pressing star 6, doing everything I possibly can to try to get there. I got to respond quickly. I think it was Jeff Eckhouse who just asked a question regarding compliance. Jeff, it's very difficult to answer that question. What do we go on? Do we go on Rod's comments that no matter what whatever we need, we'll do it? Do we go on some sort of a clear, definitive plan for managing compliance? I think that's exactly how you have to go about it. You can't go on a shallow promise because I'll tell you right now, as Tim indicated, we're getting different signals from different people. You know, one hand, somebody says, whatever it is, we'll do it. On the other hand, somebody else says, well, that's the case. We don't have the money to do it. We're going to rely on third party. And, you know, until somebody gives, at least I'm speaking for me and strictly for me, not for employers, but for me, until somebody gives me a sense of certainty, a sense of order, and a sense of predictability, how in the hell can I make a decision about how to move forward? I mean, right now it's totally unstructured. We have no idea what direction we're talking about in terms of compliance. We don't even know whether we really have a commitment. We got somebody saying something, but action speaks louder than words. Thanks.
Thanks, Ken. We do have some interesting background noise. I wouldn't characterize it as a duck, but certainly unusual. So, again, if people could mute, that would be great. Before I go to David's got his hand up. David, before I go to you, let me offer one more suggestion, and that is that we as a working group could, it seems to me, write proposals that have conditional approvals in them that says if the following things happen, then the following other things could happen. And essentially what we could do is we could lay out the roadmap that's acceptable and present that as a recommendation. we would have to insert that into this document if we wanted to do that, but it seems to me within our brief to do so. And with that, David, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mikey. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with the group just for a few minutes here. I just wanted to provide a little guidance based on, you know, my review of the work coming out of the subteam. And you know, first of all, I would sort of echo what you've heard already from Brian that, you know, the framework makes sense. You know, basically, I would reorder it a little bit just into five key topics, such as compliance risk management, policies, procedures, and controls, allegations for reporting, investigations, and enforcement, training and communications, and then finally, measuring and reporting the program's effectiveness. But even when you have those five broad buckets, what really counts is the work that goes on in each one of those five buckets. And so I just wanted to share with the group that late last year, our team, the compliance team, performed a new GTLD program operational readiness assessment. And so I do have some information that I can provide to Brian and to Ken that we can feed into this document, which will actually help put a little bit more substance behind each one of these key three activities or areas, or even, you know, potentially five key activities or areas. But I think with that type of framework, that's a good first step in getting the kind of assurance that I think Ken and others are looking for, that, you know, that ICANN will step up to the plate here and make the investment to move this forward.
Thanks, David. And, you know, one of the senses that I've got just standing on the sidelines of the conversation is that there are really two broad views. One is that compliance is important, but that we can proceed without having it entirely in place. And another group which says compliance is important and we can't proceed until it's been demonstrated to be in place. And I think that the point of agreement is that compliance is important and that to the extent that we can lay out a roadmap to a compliance function that's going to be effective and up to the task and you know, essentially build a comfort level with that, that goes a long way in addressing some of the issues that people have got. Ron, I assume your hand is left up from before, so I'm going to go to Alan, and then if it's not, I'll come back to you. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, am I on?
You're on. Go ahead.
Okay. I think as listening to Brian and then a little bit in David, I get the feeling that one of the problems is we are over-designing and over-structuring the whole compliance concept because we have such a low understanding of what the current group is capable of and what they're planning for the future. And I'll give it as an example. It's not an ironclad one, but In the past, when we've had some serious infractions, I don't know if that's an editorial comment on what I'm saying.
Yeah, whoever's got their phone ringing, you should mute.
When you look at what ICANN has been able to do in some serious problems we've had in the past, they have normally, you know, de-accredited the registrar on grounds of financial ones. They didn't pay their bills in addition to being negligent in some other way, or the owner had a criminal record. In other words, we get them on technicalities that where they have been sloppy along the way and not actually get them on the infraction of the rules itself. And that gives a lack of confidence that whatever the rules and structure we come up with in the future, we're going to be able to really address them. You know, if in the worst case we have someone who's violating the rules but isn't a criminal and does pay their bills, are we going to be in a position to really do anything or not? And I think it's that lack of certainty, that lack of belief that ICANN will be in a position to do anything that's causing us to overreact in many of the details. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. And I think that's essentially one of the points that we need to get into this draft is this lack of confidence being a huge barrier to the group in terms of arriving at consensus on some of these other issues. Ken, go ahead. You're muted again. And we're still not hearing you. That star six thing, you know?
You should be able to unmute him.
Oh, that's an idea. Let's see if I can do that. I thought of that. God. Can't find him in the list. Oh, he's not muted. Ken, you're not muted. Is maybe your phone muted? Or is this the dreaded Ken Stubbs phone again?
It could be the dreaded Ken Stubbs phone again.
Yeah. I think the dreaded Ken Stubbs phone has intervened. Brian, is that enough feedback for you to take another pass at this? We are rapidly running out of time. And,
let me apologize for the background noise, but yes, yeah, certainly I can take that feedback and circle back with the sub-team and put the next iteration together. And, yeah, David, Giza, if that was you, I'd certainly be interested in anything that you had to offer.
Absolutely. I'll make sure to connect with you, Brian.
Thanks.
Okay. I'm not sure if Ken was going to bring this up, but we are running pretty short on time, so I would like to take a sense of the group as to how to use this last 15 minutes. Clearly, we're not going to be able to give all of the remaining agenda items due treatment. What is also emerging is that a lot of these drafts are going to have to come back before us on next Monday's call, which is going to make life very tight next week, but that's the breaks, I think. So would people prefer to hit SRSU, talk about the way forward in general? What's the sense of the group? SRSU? Amadeo, go ahead.
No, just to say that I would like discussing a bit about the way forward in general.
Okay. How about others? Why don't we do Christina, go ahead.
Just that I'm going to be completely inaccessible from Saturday through next Thursday, so to the extent that I have some responsibility with regard to SRSU, it would be helpful to get a little bit of guidance as to kind of where everyone is. I mean, there's obviously been a lot of traffic, but I haven't been, it hasn't been entirely clear to me whether there's any provisions, at least of the IPC proposal, that if we tinkered with them or tweaked them, people would be able to live with them. So, you know, I'm happy to kind of punt to Scott and other IPC members on the group, but if there's anything I can get done before then, I'm happy to do it.
Okay. Ken, we'll give you another try if you want.
Yeah, Mike, can you hear me all right?
Ah, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, fine. I have two suggestions. First of all, most of us have time blocked for the call on Monday already. My suggestion would be to add a half an hour to the call. It's clear that we're going to need a little more time on Monday, and if we don't budget for it now, it just becomes a crisis in the last 30 minutes. So I would strongly suggest you consider doing that. And if necessary, since we're right down to the nub, if we have to add a half an hour onto the second call, that's fine. Those people who make it, fine. Those who can't, that's the way life is. You know, I know it's a tough time of year for all of us. Just food for thought, Mike. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks, Ken. Good ideas. Let's do that. Let's plan on another half hour on both calls next week. And given the fact that we are giving ourselves a little bit more call time, let's spend a few minutes talking about SRSU so that Christina and Scott and the rest of the gang have some feedback on the draft. and then let's wrap it up. So I'm not sure if the draft is out on the list. Maybe, Margie, you could hunt it down and put it up in the sharing window. And in the meantime, does anybody kind of want to summarize the state of play on SRSU at this point? Are there points of agreement that are emerging, or are we essentially at the same place that we've been sort of all along? Anybody got any observations on that?
I mean, the only observation that I can make is that there seems to be verging on consensus among the non-contracted party House participants of the working group that the exception should exist. I haven't really seen much traffic on the specifics of the various conditions, all of which were really intended to limit the applicability of the exception, not because, you know, we think we're better, but solely to limit the potential for gaming. That's really what all of those conditions are intended to do. And as I put on the list last night, this morning, there was a lot of discussion in the IPC about should this just be a broader SRSU exception as opposed to just for brands. And ultimately, although it was only a slight majority, the majority view was we're the IPC. You know, if there's someone else that wants to advocate for SRSU in other circumstances, that's their purview. But our responsibility is to the IP community. So, again, I don't think we're necessarily eliminating the possibility of the SRSU being limited solely to brands. It just wasn't what we put forward.
Thanks, Christina. Ken, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Mike. I forgot to take my hand down.
Oh, okay. Richard, go ahead.
Yeah, so a question for Christina, and I think we've exchanged emails on this on the list and also privately, but just so the whole group can kind of hear the response here and think this through. Your concern with the method that I've been advocating, which is use the registry list of reserve names, your concern with that is that you wouldn't be able – I'm asking you a question here, by the way. So your concern with that is that you wouldn't be able to negotiate a suitable contract provision with ICANN that sort of gave you the flexibility to add to that list sort of as quickly and easily as the registry wanted to do. Because if you were able to negotiate that sort of provision, then it seems to me the registry list of reserve names is just a much faster, easier, cheaper way to do what you want to do as opposed to having your own registrar.
That's certainly part of it. But the other part is that it's the view of most members of the IPC that going that route is much more susceptible to gaming and abuse than having a specific exemption. And in fact, what a lot of us kind of scratch our heads over is that it's no big secret that many trademark owners are not in favor of the introduction of new GTLDs. But one of the arguments that we have heard consistently is that we need them because there's no good domain names left. Well, if you're setting up a situation where the registry can reserve for itself essentially all of the domain names, how do you change that? So that really goes to kind of an underlying philosophical issue, but ultimately it goes to the fact that we just think that going the route that you suggested is much more likely to lead to gaming and abuse than the exemption.
Okay, so let me just respond quickly there. But I mean, that provision that I'm talking about is in the contract now. It has been a long while. So are you saying that you need to have that removed? Because it seems to me that if you're concerned about abuse in that respect, that that provision is already there, and it has been for some time.
I certainly agree with you. It's my understanding, though, that it's never been used to quite the scale, or at least openly advocated as being used to quite the scale that I think you're suggesting. And that's where the concern comes in.
You probably need to submit comments to the DAG then in that respect, because, I mean, at the moment, it's structured such that a registry, if it chose, could register all the names to itself. I mean,
it's on the list.
We're getting off topic a little bit here. I don't think that's going to happen because there's no traffic and there's no value to those names. Just
the registry having them themselves. Anyway, that's a different string for us to talk about.
Okay. Anybody else got comments for Christina about SRSU? Not seeing any. Well, I guess one of the things that I did hear is the possibility of broadening this. Well, it seems like there are two forks to this. One is the possibility of broadening it to non-brand holders, and the other is Richard's point that he's been advocating for quite some time about the exceptions list. It seems like it would be nice to run those to ground a bit between now and Monday if we could. And maybe get that into the draft. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess when I've heard Richard saying it, I read it, I took it in a different way. In that I took it, and perhaps he didn't mean it that way, that we are still talking about an exception, but the whole sole substance of the exception is instead of going to ICANN to get names added to the block, to the list, that those with the exception would be able to add them up to a certain limit or within certain bounds. So in other words, it's still an exception, but it's structured in a very, very tight way without having 49 clauses on it. And maybe that wasn't what Richard was intending, but that's what I have been hearing it as. So it doesn't apply to every TLD, every new TLD, only to those who have these circumstances, but it's a lot easier to phrase and structure than what we've been talking about.
Richard, do you want to come back on that? That's not the way I was listening to it, so it'd be good to clarify that.
I'm not sure I understood exactly, but let me take a shot. So what I'm saying is that the current way the DAG's written, any registry can reserve names for its own use. There's specific provisions in the contract that permit that. And so what's less specific is when and how you can add to it. Some people are interpreting it that you can only add to that list when you kind of launch, at the time of launch. Certainly the contract's not specific about what would happen if you wanted to add, say, extra names 12 months after launch and how quickly that would take, et cetera, et cetera. But what I'm saying is that's in the contract now. Anyone can do that. So an SRSU could simply, you know, add all the names, in my view, that it wanted to use. It wouldn't have to use a registrar. It wouldn't have to pay a registry fee. It wouldn't have to pay a registrar fee. It would just simply register those names for its own use and use them. I believe that's possible now. And I was just saying that if in fact, we find that that's not possible for whatever reason, I believe it is, and I think Kurt at the GNSO session in Brussels endorsed that it was possible. But if for some reason we find it's not possible, then I do, personally, I support the notion of a cross-ownership exception for single registrant, single user. And I say that not in the context of brand, but just any single registrant, single user. I know we have to define that precisely, but that's what I support if we can't make the current contract work, that reserve list work. So I don't know if that clarifies or not. Oh, there you go.
Thanks, Richard. Okay, we're down to the last couple of minutes. Christina, that's about what you're going to get, I think. The highlights, I think, are the possibility of broadening this and also the possibility of mentioning Richard's approach in the next draft. And Richard, if you would be willing to join that drafting team and maybe get some language about that inserted as an option, I think that this is really the method for allowing a single organization to register its own names, and that what we need to do is go up one level and focus on the desirability of being able to do that so that then we can pull around that in the group and see what sort of support there is. That's it for this call. I will take Ken's idea under advisement. I think it's a good one if people can sort of mentally sketch out an extra half hour for the two calls next week. We're basically, in order to get an initial report out with the appropriate lead times, we have to publish it basically right after the call next Thursday, Friday, or maybe it's Saturday, I can't remember, but very soon. So we're pretty much down to the wire, and we need something around which we can build a poll so that we can assess the level of support for some of these things. I'm going to go ahead and just continue working on the structure of the poll for the percentages things on the list. And I would, hang on a minute. I think the other two things that we really need is we really need the, Keith, just before the call, posted a summary of one of the Brussels molecules. We really need the other molecule summaries as soon as possible so that we can also build polls around those. And so that's the last request before I... Was it Ken that was speaking? Somebody?
Yeah, real quick, Mike.
Yeah.
I had a little chat with Chuck Gomes, and also it appears that the council is in the process of trying to move their meeting, the one that they were planning on having, I believe, is it in September or whenever it is. I think we need to be pushing to take maximum use of the comment period that once it opens up. We need to be able to work in real time based on the comments as they come in and take a look at them and try to react if there's things we find in there that are constructive to help us this out. Thanks.
Thanks, Ken. I think that's all correct. I mean, we'll use every trick in the book to land this thing so that we can continue to work and keep working towards a consensus point of view. I commend us all for working this hard and staying civil. I know this is really hard, but let's keep at it, and I'll see you on Monday. Thanks, gang. That's it for me.